said the fight to make ends meet keeps a man up on his feet, holding down his job.
And you're on the Postman Show this morning. It's Michael Ridden with technology doing not what it wants to do, which is okay, because we're not dealing with technology today. We're going to be dealing with the Magicana, the Cosmos, with our special guest, the Arch Wizard of New Zealand, with one of his wizards and riding shotgun with him. How are you doing there, Wizard?
I'm fine, thanks, but this technology is driving me back at the moment. I don't like it much either. I don't mind telephone, I can just handle that. I prefer face-to-face contact with people.
Yes, myself indeed include. However, we'll just press on. We started to talk to you a little bit about the concept of the fund revolution, because I see this is something which I've followed that you've talked about and written about since I was about 17 years old, and I really think you're onto something quite amazing there, and I think it's part of the solution to a lot of problems out there. Maybe you'd just like to tell us a little bit about what the fund revolution is and how it came to be.
Well, the first thing you could do is to recommend people look at my website. That's Wizard New Zealand. Just Google Wizard New Zealand, and there's quite a lot about it on there. How it began. It's connected up with tension resolution, which is a theory which has got quite a long record, and you provoke tension and then resolve it with fun, so you can that way get people to see common interests. Mutual interests are important. That was part of it, but it was reading a certain book, which I think is one of the great books of history, and that is the Homo Ludens by a Dutchman called Huizinga, and he's pointed out that those societies where people are very serious tend to be brutal, cruel, and unstable. We're the top people. The very top people play and love fun and ride horses and do dancing, as they did in the medieval period. You get a much more stable society. So that's part of it.
Well, it makes pretty straightforward sense. It really isn't. Everyone's smiling and not going to run around and be causing trouble. But, I mean, you know, what I liked about it was, you know, when I was reading through and I could relate to this, was that, you know, you introduced this as a lecturer when you were at, I think it was Melbourne University. And this was in the early 60s, mid-60s.
No, I was lecturing at New South Wales University in Sydney.
I'm sorry, my arch wasn't this. I stand corrected. I will curse myself 1,000 times after the show. But it was the 60s, yes?
Again?
The period when you were lecturing?
1967, I arrived at the University of New South Wales. Before that, I was a cultural organiser for music, theatre, films and so on in West Australia. So in 1967, a new department opened up, the first in this part of the world, of sociology. And I was the only member of staff with a degree in sociology. So when the student riots broke out in the 60s, I was able to displace their obvious political programs to get reforms instead and to give the students more fun and to get the lecturing at a higher standard and more informed and more entertaining. So I think having fun is a good way to learn.
Entirely it was, but I mean, the other interesting thing too was that, you know, I mean, you had a period where a lot of people were very radicalized, they had woken up to various things that were happening around the world, but you also ended up with a protest movement that was very fractionalized, because everybody was sort of saying, this is the way it must be done, and if you don't agree with us, then you're just a fascist totalitarianism.
It was a group of people, mainly Trotskyites, who took over the student unions by careful planning in 1970. They took out the student newspapers so they can control all the propaganda and information, and they began to make the university into hotbeds of political activity. It was a stupid, badly done, and it just destroyed the universities, and now they're all degree factories. It wasn't a good solution at all.
No, that's pretty much what's happened, you know, here in New Zealand these days. But, you know, I mean, my sort of contact again with the fund revolution concept was I was involved with chaos, so in fact I was one of the dictators at Canterbury University. And, you know, we actually had...
One of those warlords they had?
Well, actually, technically speaking, I'm an ancient time lord of chaos, but we were...
Chaos, yes. They were a playful group, yeah.
One of the great unknown, apparently. But, you know, the point was that chaos in its period actually had a lot of power within the university, because we had a very good way of actually energizing people and bringing them to the various forums, and people found it enjoyable, and people wanted to participate in the university politics. So for a period, we actually had quite a bit of clout, and it was just, I sort of noticed that when we started to actually take what we were doing actually serious, that we actually lost an element of that power that we had been given.
if you take yourself seriously, you're going to end up looking for power anyway. It's very common. If you don't regard it as very important and it all goes pear-shaped, you simply move on to something else. I found, for example, our Imperial Army is an important concept. I created the army in Australia because the pacifist society gave money to the Viet Cong. Now, when that happens, you know we've reached a point of complete absurdity. People are far too serious. So we began to just feel, let's have war for fun, and because peace lovers are tend to be rather violent people, I found. They're too serious. So pacifists should be avoided as too fanatical. But a nice, happy crowd of people who enjoy war but who don't want to be violent or hurt each other is the best solution. So war is good, but peace can be very dangerous.
Well, exactly. War is a lot of fun, especially when it involves large quantities of jam, whiskey, and
yes, of course it is. Lovely. And mess dinners and all that stuff, and medals and ceremonies and marching to and fro and doing daft exercises, all that's great fun. But in furious pacifists, I'm afraid, they go ballistic. They get so angry.
The thing about it is that, you know, what you're doing was also, you know, by having these battles, and so you're having people that may not necessarily be that politically orientated, they would stop and they would actually look at what you were doing. So it was actually a very good way of actually drawing people from the outside that weren't necessarily radical in one direction or another.
It's a very complex issue. I'm looking at what's happened to the world since electricity came into operation. It altered the whole of our meaning of life to have electrical communication. And what we're looking at now is image conditioning rather than verbal conditioning. And images are in themselves a communication system of very great power. It works directly on the brain. So if you use images to communicate rather than words, you can get a lot done you can't do with words. So a lot of what I do is just to look weird and be there. Now, this is people don't understand this. Well, there's no point in explaining to people who aren't listening, but it will be affected by your appearance. So like that film of Peter Sellers being there, there's a lot to be said just for creating an image, in this case the wizard image, and just parading up and down until people try and find what the hell you're up to.
Entirely. And in the case, I believe that you had the great phone wars of the 1990s with the telecom, and you know that whole fun revolution.
The phone box. Well, that was pure joy. That one, pure joy. I had no reason for it, just a colour choice, a simple preference for colour. That's all it was. And the whole town was in an uproar of mirth and delight as telecom tried so hard to stop me from painting their phone boxes back to red again. That was one of the best examples of pure fun, actually, without any moral purpose, without any rationality, just pure enjoyment.
Well, I mean, it was also brilliant because, you know, one level you should have showed the absurdity of the whole marketing, and I always find that comedy is the best way to bring somebody down. But at the same time, what you were doing was actually marketing the city of Christchurch, so it wasn't that you were protesting per se, you were actually doing a little bit more than that. It was quite a holistic approach to what you were doing.
Well, what I was doing was showing the power of a single man against the entire operation called telecom. We don't have to do everything in groups and communities and armies. Just one person can do amazing things if they've got this special skill of not going too far, of knowing how far you can take things, and finding support from, in my case, Alf's army and the council were the main supporters. And, of course, the newspapers and media did cover it because it was so ridiculous.
Entirely. You know, what is interesting, however, and I think we'll touch upon you very briefly, is that pre-Christchurch earthquakes, the establishment had quite a soft spot for you.
No, not at all. In the 1990s, they changed the entire structure of the city council. They put a CEO in charge of it, McTurk. He organised vast numbers of bureaucrats to run the city, and the city councils themselves lost control. And they still run the city. The city councillors are good friends of mine, can't do anything. It's all been done by the bureaucrats. It's Yes Minister gone mad. And that's what's happened. I've been excluded from everything in Christchurch since 1995. You will not find me on any of their websites. I'm not mentioned in the Academy of Tourism. No one knows where I speak or when. There's absolutely no interest in what I'm doing amongst the council, not the councillors, the bureaucrats whatsoever. In fact, they see me as a threat. I'm not on the payroll. They can't threaten me with losing anything, because they've got nothing to lose. So it's really a very hostile environment since the 1990s. The earthquake had the opposite effect. Suddenly everyone thinks I'm very important here as the icon of the city, as a friendly face of a miserable, wretched, disaster capitalist town, as an honest, outspoken person in a world full of people carefully covering their backsides all the time. It's been a very interesting period. That's why the other wizards are now starting to appear. I'm convinced that they can see that the world needs a lot more wizards right now.
Oh, entirely. And I believe, you know, aside from your growing army of real troops, I believe, you know, the fun revolution has been picked up a wee bit as well. But what would you call it, the Ministry of Awful in Christchurch?
There's two ministries. The Ministry of Awesome, which is the Vicky Bucks plan, and the Ministry of Awful, which is a local comedian has that idea, Ministry of Awful. And it's quite a good to see these two operating. But the crisis is in a terrible mess. It really is. It's been badly handled. There's no public feedback, no democracy. And we're getting no chance to stop the most monstrous and stupid things happening. They're running out of money. The city itself, you've got no plan left. It's in a terrible mess.
Well,
it's like,
you know, it really is that sort of, you know, it's become quite a totalitarian situation that there's no human council, there's no humanity sort of to its
nature. Not at all. Zero.
It's just a whole bunch of catch 22, and some of it actually.
Yeah, they're making a lot of money. They're getting a nice career out of it. They're going to destroy the economy of Christchurch. They're going to take off with the money and they'll be happy, but the city is suffering very badly. And on top of this all, we've got a monstrous bishop whose only delight is to ignore everybody's opinions and say the cathedral's mine and I want the insurance money and will not listen to any arguments that it can be fixed without cost. It's virtually, you know, almost cost-free to completely restore the cathedral. And that building brings in 700,000 tourists a year, which is vital to our economy. But the bishop wants the insurance money, so she wants to knock it down. Doesn't like Gothic anyway, she wants a nice meeting house. It's an incredible situation we're in. You wouldn't believe it. It's like a nightmare.
I mean, I'm quite staggered. I grew up in Christchurch and quite, you know, strong affiliation with Christchurch. And I just can't believe that the cathedral, which is such a landmark and such huge branding product, that they really don't want to rebuild it. And it's like if they've been shown architects, you know, various, you know, so that, you know, that this can be done. And yet it's almost like they feel like the authority is challenged, so just on that basis alone.
We've got now 80% supporting the restoration of the cathedral. But the bishop ignores all this and says, I want it down, it's my building. That's what the argument is. And now we've got no heritage protection anymore. Now we've lost our heritage protection owing to the serious emergency legislation. We can't even use heritage arguments.
So, yes, it really is a town without,
without a soul. It's got no soul. It's gone. This place is like a zombie. That's why all the popular films are zombies. Vampires, public servants who suck us dry of all our money. And the zombies are people wandering around with no direction. That's very common. But wizards are also in this mix. If you look at the cinema, the films, the television, you'll see a combination of wizards, zombies, and vampires.
Well, as a sociologist, you know, I quite often believe that, I'm sure you appreciate this, I quite often believe that when you watch the mass media, that it's simply a reflection of what's happened in the real world.
It seems I bet it is, yes, too much so.
I'm actually thinking about this, because as I'm talking to you, I'm looking at examples of the fun revolution, and I'm looking at the soldiers on the HMS Sheffield during the Falklands singing Always Look on the Bright Side of Life.
Yeah, that was incredible.
And all that British comedy of that period, which was actually quite, it was totally irreverent and totally in your face, that whole Monty Python. And it was a very big mark of British humour.
It all comes out of the Goon Show. That was the great mother of all great fun, was the Goon Show. There's also Father Ted to remember. That's a lovely series too, of course. That's quite more recent too.
I mean, do you watch a lot of pop culture stuff? I understand.
Yes, I watch quite a bit of. I like good quality ones. I don't like soap operas and bad comedies. I like some of to have them, you know, Father Ted, things like that. But I don't much go for the American types. They're too much smart alecky jokes, verbal jokes. I like good visual humour.
What I was going to ask you is, looking at, like, especially New Zealand, there's that total absence of actually, not just comedy, but the ability to laugh at yourself and laugh at authority. What do you extract from that observation?
Well, I think they did in the past. The reason I came to live in New Zealand was that they liked the Goon Show a lot. I made my test case. I would not live in any country that doesn't like the Goon Show. And that was in the 70s and 60s. And that means they've got a taste for it. What they haven't got is anyone producing comedy, because the people who run New Zealand are a bunch of idiots, basically. Serious, po-faced, and rather stupid people. And because humour threatens them, they try not to do it in England. Look at Gadsby and MacPhail. They were brilliant, and they couldn't get a show put on television here, even though they were superb humorists and very good at it, too. They couldn't get anywhere. No one who's got a good capability here will get anywhere in New Zealand right now. It's being flattened. It's everything done by Auckland, nothing in New Zealand. We used to have comedy programs, our local programs in Christchurch, the Mainland Touch. They're really good programs. They were all closed down and moved to Auckland, where they just put on these stupid pseudo-American rubbish.
Well, you know, one of the things that you should actually think, you know, think on those lines was, you had the satire, the last one, of course, was the satire puppet series. And actually, the person that did the makeup for these satire puppets was Trace Hodgkin, who did a lot of very good cartoon work in the Listener magazine and the Dominion. And you know, he was the one that pointed out to me the reason why you don't see him anymore is he was saying that you're not allowed to make parody of John Key or politicians anymore, and they've actually passed through that law which says you're not allowed to lampoon politicians in the
House. Well, I think that's quite common. I think politicians like being parodied, and they encourage it to make them more famous. But they don't parody other things. All they do is think about politics, 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 and sport. Both extremely dull things. I find politics utterly boring, and sport completely trivial. So I find no humour in either of those. But that's what everyone wants to laugh at: politics and famous sportsmen. I think that's ridiculous. I like laughing at women. I like laughing at religion. I like laughing at scientists. I enjoy laughing at military people. All sorts of targets. I even like laughing at wizards. And there are plenty of them around, the weird guys.
Well, I also always make sure you laugh at the wizards. I'm a long, long distance away, so they can't hear you. It's only so much frog you can handle.
Look, I don't want you to chat to my this to Ari here. He's taken on the role of being my assistant here in Christchurch.
Well, that's true.
He's looking after the city quite well, and he's got a good talent in music.
Well, I will do that in a second, but I do would like to ask you one last, but before I kind of move on to the assistant aspect of that, what I would be interested to say is, in terms of the comedy, or the lack of comedy, in terms of the Charles Abido situation, or you may correct my pronunciation, what are your thoughts in terms of that whole situation where we've got now, where it's like, I mean, the before situation was what they were doing, and my understanding was that they poke-funded everybody, not just Islam, and the situation now where we've got, oh, it's okay to poke-fund at Islam, but you're not allowed to poke-fund at Israel. I mean, do you have any comments on this sort of the nature of lampooning and satire in our media?
Yeah, I believe we're going, in psychological terms, we're entering a period of narcissism, which is everyone trying to please people by saying the right things. And they're very concerned with being looking good in public. What they do is quite different, of course, but they want to look good in public. So they don't care what they think and what they feel is irrelevant. You're giving them a good impression. Now, this hysteria means that they're easily worked up about religious topics. Anything else that's got anything other than sport or politics gets them really steamed up. They're shallow, easily excited, and very dangerous people. They could end up killing us in any minute. You cannot trust most people not to go into an hysterical state fairly easily if you hurt their feelings. Now, this isn't true of the past. The old Key was a tough bird in the past. He took all this nonsense. He'd roll his eyes up and put his tongue in his cheek and be rude. But they're losing it. But I'm encouraging it by doing more and more outrageous things to get people to know that there's nothing they can do to stop me.
Well, I think it's a very powerful situation, too, because, I mean, as you said, you know, what we're dealing with is we're dealing with psychopaths. They are, by nature, narcissistic in personality. So the best way to actually expose that shield is to make them laugh at them, in which case they kind of, you just sit back and let them, you know, throw the toys out of the coffin, and then they have to kind of go, oh, I guess I've just showed my real self.
Well, I want them to attack me, because that way they show themselves what they really are. I can't attack them. It just bounces off. They don't listen anyway. But if you let them attack you on your own ground of your own choosing, then they're showing what they are, usually obsessed with power and money. That's their main interest, not truth or reality or anything else, but power and money. They've got no souls, these people. They're zombie types. But they're very pleasing, and they smile nicely, and they always use your first name, and they're always terribly warm. The Blair type, you know, or the Clinton type, or the Bob Parker type.
Well, and I guess that's the other good thing, and we'll have a chat to your assistant. Well, he's a wizard in his own right, so don't be undermining that. But don't want to poke fun at him, because he said he might come in or something. But anyway, the whole aspect of actually being able to poke fun at these people and exposing them, I mean, that really is a huge, powerful tool right there. And it's the way I see what you're doing there is that when we see someone like, well, I mean, I guess the thing is, we take someone like John Key, and he's, you know, wrapped up in Texter and Cosby, and he's, you know, professional public relations and spin doctoring, and they're very careful. And all this is, you know, it's a hard thing to show people what's really going on there until you laugh at them, in which case they kind of forget their training, and this is why it's such a value, the fun.
I don't think they will. I said I don't agree with you there. I don't think you should attract these people. They like it. It makes them more important.
Well,
I think they should.
Not,
you should draw them onto your own ground. Let them attack you. It's far better if they attack you. That's the best technique in all forms of self-defense anyway, is to draw the enemy, use his energy to attack you. If you attack them, it makes them more important, and the people are so sorry for them.
Well, exactly. So when I mean attack, what I actually mean was to say to parody them. If you, you know,
parodying is good, yes.
Show them as a lampoon or parody them or do something which basically causes them to feel that they've been laughed at. they themselves will, you know, you don't need to attack them because they will do themselves. But this is the best way to actually get them to expose themselves. And I noticed that Julian, for example...
No, I don't. I want people to laugh at me as a fool. I'd much rather use that technique than make them look stupid. Because you get attention to yourself again. People must be here talking about you and seeing you, or you're not there anymore. I'm not in the media. I'm no record I exist. There's nothing on the website saying I'm in Christchurch. I'm a non-person in Christchurch, according to the city council bureaucracy. So I have to be noticed for being there and being highly visible, rather than trying to attack someone else who is highly visible. Do you see my point? I'm trying to become visible, to be seen, however dark it may seem.
Because normally you're actually turning yourself invisible or causing rain. So to be visible, what's the essence of a visible spell?
Well, it's image control. If all the tourists who come to Christchurch or allow them to see the wizards out on the street, on the trams, in the square, having fun, going out on outings the weekends, all the children loving the wizards and the trams all waving at us, all those Facebook pictures of wizards are going all over the world.
Exactly. I could talk to you all day, to be quite frank, but let's just introduce one of your wizards here who's riding shotgun today. Hello.
I'll put you on to Ari right now. Ari, the wizard, who's the acting wizard of Christchurch right now, and the archwizard of New Zealand more. So here's Ari, the acting wizard of Christchurch.
So acting wizard of Christchurch.
Hello. Hi, how are you doing?
I'm doing very, very well. I'm just wondering what the official wizard protocol is for saying hello to a wizard. Is there a greeting?
Generally just greetings. Yeah, how are you?
Oh, g'day, wizard.
We interact with people normally. It's there's times when we are doing official things, and in general we just interact as normal.
Magical person puts their rainbow coat on one spell at a time. Step one. I mean, you're a lecturer. Am I correct in understanding that you're a university lecturer?
No, that's not true at all. I am a performer and a musician.
Oh, okay.
And I earn all my money from music. Which has freed me up to do what I want with the rest of my time.
Okay.
So basically, I've discovered that as now a 33-year-old, that everything I was told about being an adult was wrong. You don't have to work hard. You can find a way to get paid well for what you do. Work fewer hours, as long as you don't care too much about money, as long as you care about having good life and good fun. And if you're rich in time, you can you have time to try out all sorts of things.
Well, that's always a nice position to be in when you don't have to worry about the banalities of life. But, I'll switch in from the lecture aspect of it, because no one might say that they're, you know, academics and performers in their own right. But, again, this whole concept of being a musician and a performer fits in very well with the whole concept of the fun revolution. And outside of entertainment, I mean, do you absorb the serious side of what the whole concept of the fun revolution is? Is that something that really appeals to you, or...?
There a serious side? Yes. Well, the one of the most valuable things I see that what Jack, the Archwizard of New Zealand, has given us is he's proven to you that you're not trapped and you can get away with much more than you think. What I mean is that most people walk around in a state of anxiety today, and it's getting worse. It's even worse for the younger generations than it was for baby boomers, etc. Is that you're always constantly told since your schooling onwards that about what you can't do, or you can't do this, or you have to work hard for the sake of working hard, or you can't be this, or you can't grow up to be a wizard, or you can't grow up to be a fairy, or you can't get what you want. It's either earn money, do you know what I mean? So, and the truth is...
It's very much a consumerist society. You live 3 years at school, so they put you in a factory,
that's
so you
right.
fight for those rules, and you'll basically...
problem, because the things that they tell you are real, money, authority, nations, governments, are not real at all. They're what we call faith-based value systems, or what I call faith-based value systems,
goes hand in hand with the whole concept of what I'm looking at, because the more you step into a totalitarian-based society, the more rigid and serious and somber it becomes. The rule of the court jester becomes that much more essential.
Well, as the Archwizard says, be suspicious of anyone who's too serious.
Well, entirely. I mean, and the other aspect of being, I grew up watching The Muppets and Sesame Street. I still believe that Kermit the Frog is the best roving reporter that ever existed.
Yes, it's good stuff, I think,
But what it really brought home to me, which I think has been lost a lot in the whole activism scene, and I'll talk about creative tourism in a sense because I think that does come into it as well, but from activism scene, it's this concept that there was this thing of, oh no, a protest must be a serious thing. You know, this is serious.
Oh, absolutely. And that's very dangerous because it turns to violence very quickly. I mean, I've been on a peace march in Christchurch many years ago where there was a punch-up, a peace march. I've also been on a, there was a National Front protest, and we did a counter march led by one of the leaders of the Chinese community, and I've got a I've got some Chinese and Maori people in my family in the more recent generation, so we went on that with the kids, etc., and not my own kids but my sister's children, and the National Front, I have to say, although obviously no one agrees with what they say, we're pretty well behaved because they don't generate. I'm afraid it was our side who were the first one to use the F word at them, etc. And although both sides were pretty good, it was a pretty good protest overall. It just shows how quickly people who have a good spiel about peace and love, etc., are very quick to turn to violent or offensive behaviors. And something that it's become clear to me since being a wizard and with the Archwizard's guidance is don't trust what people say, trust what they do. Because many people have very good justifications for everything. Yeah, hence politicians always doing one thing and saying another.
Oh, entirely. But you know, you go from the concept of that fun revolution, I mean, that to me, it's a situation of if you bring a group of people that are actually enjoying themselves in a way that makes people think, hey, I want to be part of that. You know, it doesn't necessarily mean dressing up as wizards, that maybe you bring along cupcakes along the march and you hand them out to people, or you have picnics where they are. So
It's a powerful thing. Since becoming a wizard, I mean, I became a wizard for a number of reasons. Partly was for fun reasons. Like, I thought it seemed like an interesting thing to do. At some point in my life, I decided if I can see an interesting thing to do that's more interesting than what I'm doing now, I'll go for it. And life's become a lot more fun since then. But also, I'd been religious as a boy. And then I, about sort of 12, I became agnostic, and then I became an atheist, and then I became a skeptic. And as I learned more about each thing, and this is an ongoing thing, I sort of started to see the problems with each approach. Yeah. And you grow up, you realize that the adults don't know what they're doing. And I thought at one point, well, the logical thing to do seems to be to declare myself a wizard and see what happens. And it turns out you have a much better life and everyone likes you much more and you get a lot more things done and you get interviewed on the radio and you get on the TV. And if you don't, if you're a performer anyway, it seems like a good approach.
Well, you know, and of course you've got the whole access to magic thing, and you know, there's a time of chaos, and it's quite good to be able to manage time, but somehow I always actually manage to, my TARDIS breaks down, but hey, you know, that's a side effect. seriously, you know, again, what I want to get to stress this point is that when you're doing this fun revolution, and when you're out there and you're entertaining people, and whether it's with wars, we're beating each other up with paper, rolled up newspapers, or you're just ranting cleverly, but, you know, rhetorically, all these things, it takes us the aspect of, you know, what we see here in Dunedin is, and we've got some really good activists, and they get the octagon going, they've got people who will set up and they'll speak and they'll say the serious aspect of it. Then we've got really good bands that kick in and they entertain people, and they make a really good, safe family environment. What happens?
Safe is the key, isn't it? Because you don't want it to be taken over by violent people or people with a side agenda, which happens a lot.
Yeah, exactly. And that, you know, but it's more as much me as anything. Is that what I see happening is that, you know, I look around the Octagon and we're surrounded by cafes, and we've got people that may not necessarily be that politically orientated, but they start to see how these people are behaving.
Yes. So exactly.
Actually, these people are an asset to the city. We like them being there. And what that whole approach does, it means that it allows you to have power and take ownership of. And this is what the wizard did for 20. Archwizard, am I allowed to use your non-wizard name at all?
Are we allowed to use your non-wizard name at all?
How long did you do the
reason you use your old name, Muhammad Ali?
I think we're going with the Arch Wizard of New Zealand then.
My QSM was given to the Wizard of New Zealand, not to anyone else. And that name, Ian Channel, is only used to refer to someone who used to be around in the 1960s. Muhammad Ali. He's not Cassius Clay anymore, is he?
We will stick with your right as a living work of art. But how long were you in the square for?
How long what?
When you used to go to the square in Christchurch.
I've been there 40 years this year. 40 years.
And what an amazing situation, because, you know, what you did, and I'm sure you were aware of it, but you actually made it very clear that this was a place for all people, regardless. You know, you made the entire square a soapbox.
Absolutely, because I said no microphones, no amplification, just speak on the ladder, anyone can do it, but no one did, except fundamentalists who were told by God to go and convert people. And that was all. There was no one else speaking. The whole of New Zealand, no one ever did what I did. No one got up to give their opinion on things. They'd rather use the radio for that, or newspapers for that, or classrooms in universities. They wouldn't do it in the open in a public square. In other words, they weren't convinced they had anything to say worth hearing.
I mean, it is an interesting comment that you make, because, you know, the New Zealand psyche seems to be very apologistic to itself, and it feels like if it gets up and says something, that's, oh no, I shouldn't be saying that, I'm just a Kiwi.
That's right, I like it like that. They're the hobbits, you see. Yeah. Now, those who do go up and say things are the wizards. Now, how many of those wizards are straight? How many of them are crooks or making money or trying to get followers? I don't want followers, I don't make money, I want to have fun. Now, these people do not do it for fun. They have an agenda which is not to do with giving people more fun, I can assure you. People have been turned to zombies faster and faster and faster. You can see it.
Yep, entirely. And of course, the other aspect of it, which I have to say I've actually borrowed from on my website, www.postmanproductions, I've got a little picture where the way we represent it is New Zealanders above Australia, I got it directly from your maps, where you actually had your famous maps, which you spun upside down, so that New Zealand was on the top. And I really like the statement that you're making in terms about, you know, we don't have to look at ourselves as being at the bottom, when in actual fact, we can, we believe in ourselves, be projecting to the whole world from the top.
Now, you don't have to believe in yourself. You have to persuade other people in the Southern Hemisphere that the South should be up. Then you get up there by mistake, but you can't say we are good enough. If you tell all the black Africans, if they vote the South up, black goes up, and the white colonial powers go down. If you tell the Indians that they could be on top rather than underneath, hanging down from Europe, from Asia, if you tell the South Americans that the Latin Americans can be on top of the gringos of the North, they'll all vote South up. And then New Zealand goes up as a result of persuading other people to vote South up. But you can't have like personal willpower. It's not going to work.
I mean, it goes again, and part of your, I mean, you know, you talk about the fun revolution works on the four humans, and you're talking about your own zeitgeist behind it. Would you like to just now shadow a wee bit about what those four humours are? What are the core of the fun revolution?
Well, you've got four humours in traditional medieval cosmology, which is phlegmatic, which is being regular and loyal to the past and traditions. Then you've got the choleric humour, which is being independent and going your own way and stuff the rest. Then you've got the melancholic humour, which is aesthetics, art, music, and feeling sensitive and being a bit wimpish, but it's, say, sensitive. And then you've got the sanguine humour, which is the one we need, which is couldn't give a stuff anybody, ego tripping all over the place, and not giving a damn. That is the ultimate one I like. But that's the four humours. And you can see human history in those terms. The agricultural period is to do with olives and choleric and phlegmatic. The industrial revolution, all the new societies, Greece, Rome, and the Western civilization are all to do with being choleric and aggressive. Then you've got the melancholic civilization, which is to do with shopping and sensitivity. That's the modern world of consumerism. And into the middle of all this, you see wizards appearing. This is what's happening to Lord of the Rings, Harry Potter, television. Everywhere you look now, wizards are appearing amongst the zombies and the vampires. It's very interesting. The sanguine wizards are the ones I think the future is going to be controlled by.
Well, you know, if you're right, it's the wizards which are popping up throughout popular culture. I mean, it's that power of one thing. They're the one people out of the zombies that say, well, actually, no, I'm not going to march with the rest of the troops. I believe in myself and I believe in my own power. And that's really, you know, that's what your whole... I mean, this is the other thing which is... And I'll give you a chance to maybe do a bit of promo for yourself, but the other thing I've always liked about the fun revolution was what you're doing is that you work hand in glove with the whole concept of creative-based tourism, which, you know, in places like Oamaru, we think about steampunk, but it's this whole concept of you don't have to do what everyone else is doing. You can think outside the box. And by using new technology,
big ego trip, and nothing wrong with ego tripping if you don't hide your ego behind the nation or the class or political party. Because often people do. They don't say, I want this, New Zealand wants this, or the party wants this, or the church wants this. Now, I want to say I all the time and not hide behind some abstract category.
Yeah. But regardless, you know, what you're doing is you're showing the power of imagination, and this is what all
these
tourism do, is that they pretty much will show you that you're not limited to only what you're told. You can think out that you're only limited literally by your imagination.
Well, why is it no one's written about me in any length? Why is it it's taken 40 years to get a single person to say, I'd like to be a wizard? Try and work that one out. Why is it so unpopular, what I'm doing? Why am I so hated in such a massive way for so long? It's very strange, isn't it?
I suppose, from looking from the outside, is that somebody once said, the nature of hate is when you look in the mirror, and I think it's not so much that they hate the wizard. I think the problem is that they look at what you're doing, and they look at your freedom, and they look at your irreverence, and it makes them realize actually how insignificant they really are, and it brings them face to face with their own narcissism. And I think
But why don't they then change and join me? I'm happy. I like people. They can join me anytime they like. Join in the House Army, have fun, but they don't want to join in. No, they prefer hating themselves and feeling miserable to being happy. I'm convinced of this. Most people like being miserable. It makes it important.
Do you think that's a byproduct of Stockholm? I mean, is it important or is it a byproduct of Stockholm?
It's the Industrial Revolution. I think it's all to do with the making money more important than having fun. I think you can see this coming into the West with the Greek philosophers coming into the Renaissance, coming in the 18th century, the great mass riots of the French Revolution, the American Revolution. They're not happy people. If you go back to more simple societies, they don't want much, they don't have much, and they like to have fun, and they're quite contented, and they soon respond. You'll find that, for example, the people who are from the less educated classes really enjoy my stuff and join in. But they're told to stop by the guys who know what's really important all the time. They're put down by them. So I see myself as Gandalf, and the people around me as hobbits. The hobbits can't do anything without a wizard giving them very careful advice and very careful to make sure they don't get exposed to the worst stuff. And I have to battle the other wizards. That's my role. And there are plenty of wizards around. Financial wizards, political wizards, intellectual wizards, sexual wizards. They're everywhere. And they're the wizards I've got up against. It's really tough. And I like the hobbits. I don't like wizards. I wouldn't trust myself with the ring on my finger, I can assure you. That's why the great story of Lord of the Rings is that the wizard himself will not put that ring on his finger.
Entirely. And he
because if he does, he'll rationalise how he should run the world. And rationalising is where all the clever people go wrong. If you're clever enough, you can rationalise anything, however brutal and cruel, like the Nazis, like the communists. They can rationalise anything if they've got that ring on their finger. I don't want to be the boss. I want to have fun.
I suppose, the other role in terms of that book was that the role of Gandalf was, in some ways, he gave Bilbo and Frodo, he gave them permission to actually think outside the box. You know, he made it easy for them to actually take that first step towards believing in their own power.
Only a few people can be trusted. They have to have a good heart. Even if there are bad hobbits, too, and they destroyed Hobbiton while the hobbits were away on their quest, the bad hobbits began to get the industrialization of their town, and it all got ruined. It wasn't in the film, but in the book, the film, when they get back to the town, they find it's all been destroyed by industrial development.
Yes, and that again is interesting, you know, when we move
missing
forward
from the film.
Sorry, could you just say that last bit again?
Pardon?
I just missed the last, what you just...
What was missing from the film was what happened at the end in Middle-earth, in the town, in Hobbiton. It had all been destroyed by industrial development. Because some of the hobbits were not good guys at all.
No, and I suppose that's what we're seeing today, you know, in New Zealand, is that we've moved away from a very much a hobbit-style country where people may not necessarily have earned a large amount of money, but they had a certain degree of respect for each other.
Yeah, simple things. Food, drink, fishing, you know, bet on the horses, just simple things. They're enough for most people, so why should they want more? Greed, ambition, power.
So what exactly are the aims of the Wizards for this for this year and beyond this year?
Well, as far as I can see, we've got to battle the other Wizards. That's the financial Wizards like Key. And we've got to show that they're actually bad scientists, that they don't know what they're talking about. And that can be done with a good knowledge of economics. You've got to show that the politicians rely upon spin and not upon anything else, because they won't get in unless they do. They've got to lie to get votes. That this critical system of democracy isn't working at all, because there are far too many people actually living off taxpayers' money who vote in the elections. And if a man who lives on taxpayers' money, even if he's on the welfare or a school teacher, should not vote in the elections, because it's the people who pay the money that support the country that should be voting. Those that actually pay. Could be corner dairies, could be rich people, could be they. It's those who pay the taxes should control democracy, not those who live off them. That's a terrible situation to be in.
Well, it's the situation that we're in, and we're living in a situation where our newspapers, our comedians are basically not very funny anymore. They're just basically repeating.
Yes, it's all who manages. They can manage anyone and make the most awful tripe sound good. Awful modern art is spun with all this jargon, and I want to believe how clever it is. Modern architecture, which hasn't changed in almost 100 years, is being foisted as new, visionary, and blah, 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 made of steel and concrete, which pollute the environment incredibly, and no wood being used, because that would go over 1920 with that. And it's so unimaginative, so dull, so stupid, and they're heading for a terrible disaster. The present world economy is tottering on the brink of complete collapse. It's a Ponzi scheme. It's terrifying, like this South Sea bubble, any much bigger. And as for the world, the fishes are dying in the seas, the land's becoming infertile. The whole world is heading for complete collapse. I just hope the world economy collapses first, even though it'll be terrible, rather than the environment, that's all. And that's what you might call a bottom line view. But meanwhile, if you're coming about it, then enjoy life, try and make sure people know that things are coming, be ready to change, learn to be quick on your feet, know not to trust spin doctors wherever you come across them, and you can do that. That's all you can do.
Well, you know, again, in some ways it's quite interesting because, you know, you look at Arthur Kessler, you're looking at Alvin Toffler, you're looking at Aldous Huxley, more recently Vita Vendetta. All these pop cultures for a long time have actually been telling us that if we continue down this way, this is what the end result is. But they also highlight the situation of one of those canaries in the cage is that the moment that you cease to be able to laugh at the authorities, or more importantly, laugh at yourself, that's when you know you're really in the danger zone.
Yeah, they didn't do that very often. Aldous actually wouldn't laugh at himself. He thought drugs were the answer, which I think is crazy. And I don't think that Alvin Toffler had any desire to laugh at himself and make himself look silly.
Well, no, but
they were riding their ego trips themselves.
Well, I think that probably is a fair call, but what I guess I'm thinking about was when you look at Arthur Kessler, and he's looking at...
Well, Kessler's got lots of good stuff, because he writes on so many topics. He's a very interesting person to read. Yeah, but again, he didn't think much of fun, though. No one likes fun very much.
I always found the Corn Girls to be a great parody, and there's a whole situation where it's like, you know, at the end, the guy's going to the psychologist, and he's going, you know, I can see all these horrible creatures, and basically says, it's like, you know, I once wanted to go away so I could be a zombie like everybody else. And with your co-assistant wizard, how do you pronounce it? Azriel?
Ari, A-R-I. It's like Harry without an H, Ari.
Ari, that's easy.
Yeah. It's a name, it's around, it's just not very common.
So, I mean, with Ari and yourself, I mean, he's acting quite in Christchurch. You're spending most of your time these days in Oamaru?
He travels with me now and again. Mostly he's playing his music here and operating with his friends. He brought quite a few friends into our circle, which is good too. But as I say, he's essentially a performing musician who likes fun and he's found it good to go around the town being... All the children want to be photographed with you, all the chicks come along. It's good fun. He likes that side of it all. He isn't like me, a university academic with loads and loads of bloody books going through my head all the time. But he thinks all right, but he's just not in the same type of wizard that I am. Doesn't matter, because wizards are really a temperament which you don't mind being laughed at and ridiculed. You put up with it because your ego is strong.
The other aspect, of course, is that... you know, I think it was whatever, give or take 5 years ago that your house was targeted by I believe it was Christians that carried arson on your house.
I don't know who it was. It was like probably, but just don't know. In the middle of the night, 2:30 in the morning, they set fire to the house on the outside so the fire alarms wouldn't go off. It was a wooden house, and it was the fire was set using petrol right by the front door, which meant any draft, it went up the hallway, up the stairs, and formed a perfect chimney. Normally, you could put a fire out like that, but this one, because of the effect of it going by the front door, and because it was hidden by trees and no one could see it, the house really caught fire. We got out in time. There were various exits from the house, but all the books, Alice's books, went. I lost all my costumes. There were some things were saved, but it was pretty bad. And then after that, the council shut down on my activities and wouldn't mention that I existed anymore, so I suffered a complete eclipse around the year 2000. It was more or less out. I had to come back from nowhere, fight my way back. It was getting my clothes back, getting a house, coming back in the square again against complete eradication by the fundamentalists and the council, who were frightened, upset in the fundamentalists. They said that I curse people. No one gave any examples of this, but they said I curse people, and the council said, oh, we mustn't have someone that we relate to who curses people, so they stopped relating to me. No more wizards.
It is an example, you know, at the moment there's a lot of, you know, people going on. I was looking today that the number of statistics of actual Muslim attacks in Europe was actually, of all the terrorist attacks, they only made up 2% of all the attacks, and most of them were actually Christian fundamentalists. Yet our mainstream media never reflects that situation, and I guess, you know, what happened there was a good example of the fact that, you know, our enemies, we don't have to go for looking for enemies abroad when there is enough people here that are quite extremist and intolerant of other people's views.
And they love getting to the government bureaucracy. They'll move towards the government bureaucracy as soon as they can to take over power. They don't really love Jesus, they love power. And they'll say it's Jesus, but it's actually their own power that they mean. And they'll soon be found in the business organizations and bureaucracies. I am never invited to speak in any school in New Zealand, no universities, no men's clubs. I'm never invited to speak anywhere for years and years and years. The most famous speaker in New Zealand, always making it fun, making it humorous and witty, giving book lists and references to anyone who asks, with a good website backing it all up, and never invited. Now, what do you think that is? I used to be invited a lot in the 80s.
You were invited to Hagley, the school that I went to in 19...
Yeah, but not for many, many years.
No, but that was 1987, and I remember...
Yeah, exactly.
...what you were hearing, it had been a very profound effect. So, of course, I suppose the reason why they don't get people like you into schools is you're likely to affect people like me.
Yeah, that's exactly
why
it's done.
Look what I'm doing now.
Yeah, off on your own, having a little media empire down there, a little entrepreneurial activity. No, but this is the problem. I have been completely wiped off of any form of support from any educational or government institutions. So it's difficult. Being so hated is really something. It really is amazing. It makes you feel very important. It makes you feel very important being so hated. It's good for my ego. It really is.
Well, withstanding that, you know, it is an interesting viewpoint because you look at, for example, people like Dr. Martin Luther King, in fact, I'll stick with him, but, you know, at the end of the day, they didn't remove him just because he was annoying. They removed him because they hated him because what he was saying scared them, and it actually worked. And unfortunately, after he was, you know, assassinated, it created a large degree of hate
back
over the protest movement, and it very largely undermined a lot of what he was doing. And
he was doing it as a Christian, and that's a very important, there's a good philosophy of the Christian religion, but I'd combine Confucianism with Taoism and Christianity rather than just Christian. But there is a certain ethical system there which is missing in the universities and the schools and the government. And he keyed into that ethical system to stop protesting violently. He didn't protest at all. He just let people turn up in large numbers and behaved so well. His control of his crowds was fantastic. Great, great man in that respect. He didn't let any rat bag get in and spoil it.
Well, look, we've got about basically 1 minute of the show left. So before I actually say goodbye to you, maybe you might just want to repeat that website that you were telling us about so people can come and actually have a look at some of your philosophies and activities for this year.
Well, we've done a few things. We have outings where we go to the parks and get on the punts. We go on the trams. We disappear at various restaurants. We're just giving people something to cheer them up. I'm in New Regent Street most lunchtimes because that's where the old Christchurch is still alive and well, not the new glass and steel hideous place that's growing up around us, and not the wastelands everywhere. Now, there is the Gap Fillers doing similar things too.
And the website is, sorry, say again?
I think I recommend the website. Just Google Wizard New Zealand. I mean, there's loads of stuff. YouTube videos, there's all sort of stuff on there. There's fun stuff, clever stuff, and ordinary stuff. So I recommend very highly if you look at the Wizard's website, Wizard New Zealand. It's so easy to find.
Thank you very much, both of you and Ari. You're on the Postman Show, care of thebunnyfootshow.com. And you've been listening to the Arch Wizard and Ari, one of his troops, and sharing with you the philosophy and the effectiveness of the fun revolution, a philosophy brought up by the Wizard himself as an academic lecturer, and one which is very powerful, and we should really start absorbing what he has to say. And on that note, everybody, good night.
Thank you.
And good luck.
Bye-bye.